Good morning. I feel tremendous guilt, admitted Chamath Palihapitiya, former vice president of user growth at Facebook. The short-term dopamine-driven feedback loops that we have created are destroying how society works, he explained. In Palihapitiya's talk, he highlighted something most of us know, but few really appreciate. Smartphones and the social media platforms they support are turning us into bona fide addicts. While it's easy to dismiss this claim as hyperbole, platforms like Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram leverage the very same neural circuitry used by slot machines and cocaine to keep us using their products as much as possible. This was an excerpt from an article written by Trevor Haynes, from the Department of Neurobiology at Harvard Medical School. Last time, 2 weeks ago, we studied how Paul says that while all things might theoretically be lawful, all things are not helpful. In fact, some things can actually have dominion over us. Some things can actually bring us under their control. Being mastered by our screens, as we considered, it damages our ability to meditate quietly on God's word. And it can cause us to carry about mindless updates with us in our hearts wherever we go, not the glory and knowledge of Christ. But in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, Paul repeats that same phrase, but he takes his wisdom a step further. He says, all things are lawful. Maybe all things are lawful, he says, right? But not all things are helpful. All things are lawful, but not all things build up. Let no one seek his own good, but the good of his neighbor. In the survey that I sent out to you a few weeks ago, I asked you, what fruitfulness do our screens and social media bring to our lives? And the most popular responses to the survey were two key things: productivity and education, and then communication and connection with others. I agree with you. My experience is the exact same. I love my phone when I use it to listen to helpful and educative, if that's even a word, education-oriented podcasts. And I love it, my phone, whenever I use it to communicate and connect with people I love, people I care about. Our screens really, truly do make infinite connections possible. But are we connected, really? Are we really built up by maintaining our relationships through screens? 2 years ago, the American Journal of Preventive Medicine released some pretty ironic findings from a study on social media use. Catherine Hobson of NPR, I believe, summarized the findings quite well. She says this regarding the study: for young adults, social media may not be so social after all. Among people in that age group, heavy use of platforms such as Facebook, Snapchat, and Instagram was associated with feelings of social isolation, a study finds. The results surprised study co-author Brian Primack. It's social media, so aren't people going to be socially connected, he says. And while his team's previous research connecting social media use and depression in young adults wasn't terribly surprising, these new results seem counterintuitive. It turns out that the people who reported spending the most time on social media, more than 2 hours a day, had twice the odds of perceived social isolation than those who said they spent a half hour per day or less on those sites. And people who visited social media platforms frequently, 58 visits per week or more, had more than three times the odds of perceived social isolation than those who visited fewer than nine times per week. That comes from an article from Catherine Hobson of NPR. Now, she goes on to talk about how this study cannot prove causation, right? It may be that socially isolated people go to social media platforms in order to feel less lonely, or it may be that going to social media platforms makes us feel lonely. I think most of us probably agree that it's probably some combination of both, right? It's probably some sort of deadly cycle. Maybe we feel lonely, or we feel excluded, or we even just maybe feel bored. And so we pick up our phones and we go to social media and we see everybody having fun and connecting, and we see everybody's scrubbed perfect lives, and that causes us to feel discontent and more disconnected. It's fascinating to me. If we use screens in the right way, screens, I believe, really can help us build relationships with one another and have cause us to have real positive impacts on the world and on each other. But numerous studies, I'm just citing a couple, numerous studies clearly show that screen misuse actually harms our well-being and our relationships. Why is that? Why is it that so much connection is leading to so much unhappiness, so much depression, so much perceived social isolation? What I'd like to do with the rest of our time this morning is I'd like to consider four ways that this overconnection can actually lead, this overconnection to our virtual relationships can actually harm us and hurt us. And we're going to particularly talk about our relationships and our communities this morning. First way that virtual relationships can harm us is that social media can lend to self-absorption. Mark Zuckerberg said recently that he created Facebook in order to help us connect and to find and connect with people we care about. And I think that's great. We can do that. How many of us have done that, found and connected with people that we care about? And that's really great. But I want us to consider for a moment, how valuable are these connections that we have on our social media platforms, whatever your drug of choice may be? Consider the nature of any social media platform. Why do we post things? Well, it might not always be this, but typically it's with the hope that either we stir something up, get people talking, or even more likely, we want to be liked or affirmed. And I want us to think about that for a moment. Like, is that how real relationships work? This is what I did today. This is what I think. I just thought of it like 3 seconds ago, but this would totally change the world. You know. Do you like me now? Is that how real relationships work? And here you might be thinking for a moment, well, that's never been my motivation at all. Let me ask you this. Do you have the same fear that I have immediately after you post something? What if nobody likes it? Does that mean they don't like me? I know I've had that fear, and I know I'm not alone. Why is it that we post so much? What is it about it? What's motivating us? Last summer, my brother and sister-in-law were relaxing on a beach in the Bahamas, and out of the corner of their eye comes this middle-aged woman walking to the water with her daughter. And the woman, the mom, goes into the water and starts posing while her daughter takes pictures of her. For an extended period of time. Finally, the daughter gets tired of this and goes back up to the beach with the mom. But a few minutes later, she shows back up with her husband. Now she's back in the water and he's taking pictures of her as she poses in the water. Eventually, after a long period of time passes, he gets tired of it as well and they retire to the beach. But a few minutes later, she shows back up with a selfie stick. And she's in the water, posing, checking, posing, smiling. My brother and sister-in-law insist that this went on for at least an hour and a half. Why does stuff like this happen? What has happened to us as people? In a study that Donna Frieda did on social media, habits, a college student said something that was quite revealing. She said, "People used to do things and post them. Now the anticipated approval is what's driving the behavior or activity." Did you catch that? See, we used to do things in the past. We used to do things because we found enjoyment in those things. And then later on, we might post about it if we felt like it. But she says, no more. For many of us, that has completely changed. The fun is not in the activity. The fun is in the perceived approval that we'll get for posting the activity. It's not about the afternoon at the park with our daughter. It's about posting the picture and what people will say about it and how people will like it. It's not about what we do. It's about the approval we get for it. And here's what's so sad, particularly for this woman. She went through all this trouble to go to the Bahamas to relax, could have enjoyed God's creation, could have enjoyed family, but instead, she turned it all on herself. She was so consumed with herself, so consumed with even just capturing the moment, that she forgot to even live in the moment. And if you think about it, she's so self-absorbed, she really didn't take a vacation to the Bahamas at all. She was just an actress on a stage built for her. Are our social media habits causing us to become self-absorbed? Paul said in Philippians chapter 2, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Have this mind among yourselves, which is yours in Christ Jesus, who though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself by taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men." It is not inherently wrong or even unwise to post on social media or even to take a selfie. But let's ask ourselves, why are we doing it? Has this become an obsession? Whether we use social media or not, our aim is to be like Jesus, right? He was in the form of God, but he didn't flaunt that. He didn't take a picture of that and post that to the world with all of his glory. Instead, he came to serve. He came to focus on people. He came to heal and point people to the Father when he did it. If we use social media, let's use it to build up others, whether or not we use it. Let's use our lives to build up others and not turn the stage, turn the focus on us and become self-absorbed. Second thing that can be harmful about our virtual relationships is our phones can help us build low-effort communities. I have nearly 1,400 friends on Facebook. Relationships there require virtually no effort to start, just a click of a button. And the even cooler thing is if someone annoys me, it just takes another click of a button, and they're not even notified, but it's like they don't even exist in my world anymore. It's so easy to start and end relationships on Facebook. And it allows us to craft very easily these unique, tailored, Scott-centered communities of people who I know almost all of them identify with me. They value me. They share a lot in common with me. Let's be honest, of those 1,400 friends, how many of them have I had to fumble through the awkward process of building a friendship or a relationship? How many of them have I had to do that with? How many awkward pauses have I endured? How many faults, quirks, bad hair days have I overlooked? Do you think that confuses me or confuses us at all when it comes to real world face-to-face relationships? As one author put it, it can feel so natural to communicate with our online friends, but then we come to real flesh and blood communities, like on Sunday mornings, and that suddenly becomes awkward and challenging and difficult. That's because virtual communities are very easy. We have similar values and life situations. Flesh and blood communities confront us with reality. And guess what? Reality in relationships, we all know, they're slow. They can be awkward. They are diverse. You have to be patient. And you have to give up yourself. Oh, how I wish we could get this. I could get this in my mind. Real friendships and communities cost. They're always asking, isn't this weird? Have you found this? This community here is always asking for your faithfulness and your regularity and for your flesh and blood presence. And it's asking for mine too. Real communities cost. We can't just show up whenever we like and not have consequences for that. Have people not be bummed out by us not being present. How many of my virtual friends have I had to be reliable for? Sit with in difficult times. Be patient with. But that's just not how real communities work. Ray read for us earlier, Acts 4, 32 through 35. The believers in the beginning, they didn't look at anything that they had and said, this is mine. They were freely sharing everything they had, their whole lives with each other. So much so that Acts 2 and verse 46 says that day by day they attended the temple together, breaking bread in their homes. They received their food with glad and generous hearts. Day by day. And real relationships and communities, we can't check in whenever we feel like it. We can't not show without consequences. We have to do things that are inconvenient. To help our communities, sometimes we give up our Saturday mornings or our spare bedrooms. Sometimes we even sell our family's land. I think that John's reminder in 1 John 3:18 is so helpful. Little children, let us not love in word or talk, but in deed and in truth. I feel like so often the way we communicate through virtual relationships has changed my perception of what real love is. Love is communicated in retweets and shares and likes. No, loves of people's posts. But we have to take care that our virtual communities are not redefining what real love is. Let us not love in likes or shares, but in deed. But here's the good news. We know this. If we invest in real communities, they are there for us in ways our virtual friends can and will never be. A cup of coffee with a friend or a lunch with a friend in a difficult time can never be replaced by likes or shares or a GoFundMe campaign. I am so thankful for you who have been that to me in my difficult days. Third, our phones can make us overconnected and exhausted. Studies show that we thrive in communities of about 150 people. Even though virtual communities cost very little, it's been interesting to me to think about how exhausting they actually are. I don't know if you found this as well. For me, I just find that they are mentally and emotionally draining and exhausting. There is always something new happening in the world, on the news, in people's lives, in our social media connections. There's always something new happening, whether it's good or whether it's bad. And I struggle. Romans 12 tells us to weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice. I can't do that. Can you? I can't do that with all of my virtual friends. I get numb to it all. I can't pray about every tragedy. It leaves me with nothing. It leaves us with nothing for the people who are embodied flesh and blood around us, our literal, actual neighbors and real communities. Oh, but I made sure to be up to date on what was happening on the other side of the world 24/7. Why is it? Why is it that it's so exhausting? See, I think it seems really easy to write a letter or to communicate through a screen, or even read an update. It seems really easy, but we're exhausting ourselves if we constantly engage in these things because we aren't God. It is of God that David said, "Where shall I go from your spirit?" Or, "Where shall I flee from your presence?" We are not God. We cannot become digital Gnostics. We're confined to bodies, flesh and blood bodies, and we can only be one place at one time. Multitasking, wherever we are, is a facade, with people or with information or at events. This doesn't mean that we stop communicating with people in different places. Not at all. The apostles, they wrote letters and they prayed for people in different places. And yet, when you think about it, we have relatively few letters, don't we? When you think about how long the apostles lived, we have relatively few letters from their hands, don't we? Just a few. Why is that? Why is that? I think John helps us understand that so much in his little letter, 2 John 1. In 2 John 1:12, he says, "Though I have much to write to you, I would rather not use paper and ink. Instead, I hope to come to you and talk to you face to face so that our joy may be complete." Real community, real face-to-face interactions, that's a joy. That is a joy. We can communicate with people in different places, and there's nothing wrong with that. But wisdom knows when to put down the phone, put down even the pen, so that we can live where our bodies actually are. Why? Well, because we need to give focus to people who are around us. Fourth and finally, screens can distract us from flesh and blood relationships around us. Based on the survey I sent out, we are most frustrated about two things with respect to our phones. These two things just kept coming up time and again. We're frustrated that our phones cause us to be less fruitful and less productive, and we're frustrated that our phones cause us to not be connected with the people who are actually around us. Last summer, I sent a cross at a dinner from a new acquaintance that you guys do not know here. At a dinner with a number of friends, including people who were here, but you do not know the person who was there. And me and her daughter and I, we were trying to communicate with this woman the entire evening. She's somewhere in her young 30s or something, early 30s or something like that. For about a solid hour and a half, we're trying to communicate with her daughter and I. And it was hard because she was on her phone off and on throughout the evening. She'd put it down, but then pick it back up, put it down, pick it back up. But I decided I'm going to be determined. I've been thinking about how I was going to preach this series for a couple of years. And so I'm always looking for opportunities to really nail somebody. No, I'm just kidding. No, I want to find out what's going to happen when I'm persistent, right? So I start asking her questions. I share stuff with her, and I'm just trying to engage with her, get to know her, right? And she actually, a few times, responds back, outside of the, She actually asked a question a few times. One time, I'll never forget, though, she asked a question back to me about what I was talking about, and so I replied with a short story. I get to the middle of the short story, and she's picked up her phone again. So I stop to see if she's even noticed that I've stopped talking. Didn't notice. Had no clue. 3 or 4 minutes later, she sets down her phone like nothing ever happened, and the story, the question, all completely forgotten. Now that's sad. But I'll tell you what, we've all been there, haven't we? I have done that too many mornings and evenings in my home, and missed my wife and my daughter too often. I've missed people. I've missed conversations. I've missed needs. I've missed joys. I've even let Willa fall off the bed and hit her head on the floor. That's what's so sad about these things, is they distract us from the people around us who need us, who we could bring joy to, or they could bring joy to us. As a side note, that's one of the things that's so challenging, not just challenging, but destructive about pornography? Pornography takes us away from real flesh and blood relationships. And it takes us away from people who love us so much so that we can have a fantasy with a 2D screen. Guys, I don't care what your need is or what your struggle is. I want you to know we're here to help you so that none of us, because we've all been there doing dumb things that ruin our lives and the lives of people around there, we want to help you, and we want to be helped by you as well. I want to be helped by you as well, so that we can build a community of people who, in real flesh and blood relationships, we help each other so that we don't keep destroying each other's lives. If you need help, will you talk to somebody here? Will you talk to the shepherds? Will you get with a friend, a brother, or a sister? I wonder how many valuable connections we will miss as a church over time, here and in the world, if we don't decide to be present with the people around us. One of the most earth-shattering verses in the Bible is John 1:14. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen His glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. The God of the universe, think about this verse for a moment. The God of the universe did not text us. He didn't send us a video or a snap of Jesus dying on the cross. He came and was embodied in the flesh among us. And He was actually present with people. And He looked at people in the eyes and talked with them. He wept with them. He ate with them. And yes, He left them so He could spend time alone with the Father. But when it was time to be with people again, He was there for them. And He came back. What a great example to me and to all of us of what it means to show love and to really be with the people around us. Based on the survey I sent out, we all believe, just repeatedly this was said, that we should use our screens to be productive and connected with one another. And if we'll do that right, I think that's wise. The goal here, listen, the goal is not to simply disconnect. The goal is not to disconnect. I think Dr. Kimberly Young's advice is helpful. We disconnect to reconnect. For me, simple things like leaving my phone plugged into a station, a hidden station in the kitchen, and limiting notifications has made a world of difference, both in my home life and in my relationship with my phone. But that may not be what works for you. The goal of this series has not been to say, mandate these ways, these rules about your screens. No, it's been to help us ask questions and think, what's good for us? What's wise? What's helpful? What works for you may be different. But here's the thing. Here's a danger. We might overcome this addiction to our screens, right? Or this damaging cycle with our screens. We might send this evil spirit away. But if we're not careful, if we leave our lives empty, that spirit may come back with 7 other digital distractions and make us worse than we ever were before. The goal in taking off the old man is not to be naked, right? It's to be renewed in the mind and put on the new man, created after the likeness of God. And here the new man looks like someone who is free of virtual burdens so that we can focus on the flesh and blood present people around us and show real love to them. In John chapter 13 and verse 35, Jesus said, "By this all people will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." John the Baptist lived in the desert. He ate locusts and wild honey, and he wore camel's hair. He was a weirdo. And people thought he was weird. And at first, people just thought, you know, what in the world is wrong with this guy? He must have like some sort of demon in him. There's something messed up about this guy. But you know what? You know why he did it? He did it to show that he wasn't a part of the way of Jerusalem. And second, he did it to show his hope and faith in the God who promised to pour out the Spirit like water in the desert. And you know what? Eventually people caught on and they wondered, what's going on with this disconnected prophet out here? Let's go see what he's up to, what he's talking about. If we will disconnect from our phones and reconnect with real people around us and show them real love, our virtual communities may dissolve and we may look weird for a while. But eventually, I believe the world's going to catch on. I believe the world is going to catch on. And if we'll do that with faith that God can use our real connections to make a real difference in real people's lives because we're showing them real love, then disciples of Christ may start to become distinct after all. We may be known as the people who won't pull out their phone in the middle of a conversation. The people who will look you eye to eye. The people who won't have a relationship with you like people have relationships with their virtual communities. People who aren't faithful, aren't reliable. But people who love in flesh and body the people around them. I love this vision that God gives us, that Jesus gives us. This love for one another that we can have so that we can be distinct before the whole world. Let's do everything we can, not to just disconnect, but to reconnect with the world and with people. Because God created them and He loves them. He created them in His image. So let's show value towards them. I thank you for your kind attention throughout this lesson and throughout this series. There will probably be more lessons that will come. I'm still thinking about some of these things. But for now, we have an opportunity. You have an opportunity. If you'd like to get help with any of these things, if you'd like to reconnect with this community here, with Christ's body, with Christ's family, we encourage you to do that. You can talk to us privately, or you can come forward to the front while we stand and sing.